Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back for the end of the week. It is minute 84 through 85. It is a Friday episode for us.
It is.
It is, spoiler alerts, tail end of a good week.
I mean, honestly... One of the best weeks.
That's a good one. That's
a real good one. We have a motherfucking globe. And we have two Kubrick stares this week.
That's true.
Because this minute starts with another Kubrick stare. A walking Kubrick stare, if you will.
Those are hard to do.
Yeah. Well, I guess easier when you have a giant prosthetic forehead.
Yeah, he doesn't have to tilt his head down quite as far.
Yeah.
We'll get there in 2 seconds.
One, two. Go.
So we start the minute with, with a walking Kubrick stare.
Yeah.
This is followed by some continuing slow-mo undressing by Margo as she's just taking more bits of her get-up off.
Mm-hmm. But still very modest.
Yes, of course. Of course. Fade enters the room and... he's out of focus until he is for sure not.
he walks into the focus.
Walks into focus, and it's a very tight like focus range.
That focus length is being fucking held fast, dude.
Yeah, I like when they do. It's not like a hard thing to do by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a really, really cool effect.
It's a very visually pleasing effect.
Yes, absolutely. I got the feeling from him that he's like very snake-like right now. That's just the emotion that it stirred in me, because he's kind of slinking into focus. His eyes are, you know, he's got his head down. He's got the eyes looking really intense.
He's snake-like, but he's lost too. Like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
He's following this strange woman who just like got into his head, showed him a little bit of attention, and now he's like, please give me more attention. And she does.
She does, yeah. Margot then whispers, "Come to me." And I don't know if you heard this. It was kind of subtle in the music, but from the other room, it was just, "Oh." And then
oh my god.
Across the galaxy, Gunners rejoiced. She's very good with the voice. That's what I'm trying to say. So she whispers to Fade, "Come to me." And the door behind him closes as she sits down on the bed.
Yep.
She commands him to kneel, just like Moheim did to Paul back in the...
Except Fade's kneeling is much like slower and like more graceful, whereas Paul was just kind of like thrown, like dragged across the room and thrown to his knees in front of her.
Which I still think is kind of it's evidence of Margot's commanding use of the voice.
Yeah.
Instead of it being harsh, it is all very graceful and leans more towards the side of power of suggestion versus forcing action. Because the harshness of the voice would cause those, you know, you just to be very jerky and to be doing the things not of your own will.
Yeah.
But when Margot's doing this, it is almost as if she is telling Fade what to do. Yes, but he's choosing himself to kneel. Mm-hmm. So it's a much more graceful motion.
She's the spider in the web.
That's right. Fade's obeying every single command that she's giving him. When we get some intense eye contact right here.
Oh, yeah. And they're like an inch away from each other at this point.
Yeah. And she kind of kills the mood here a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of just a little bit. She says, "Put your right hand in the box." Which
but it's so like whispery and
yeah.
It's more like put your right hand in the box.
It's seductively.
Yeah, it's very like, and you know,
which is a line we've heard before.
Yep.
I don't think Moheim specified.
No, she says put your right hand in the box.
Oh, does she? Okay. Yeah. Okay, got it.
I rewatched Dune Part 1 a couple days ago. So.
I don't know how you do it, man.
They're,
I know they're good. Obviously, I think they're good, but I don't. This is the last thing I want to watch when we're going through this.
Nah. Nah. I hadn't watched Part 1. It had been a while since I had watched Part 1.
You need to get your Duncan fix.
I need my Duncan fix. I need my Leto fix, you know.
It's sure, sure.
My million deaths are not enough for UA fix.
Yep.
Even though that's Lynch, but, you know, still needed UA.
Well, that's from the books, too. You gotta
notably see not in Denis' movie, though.
You gotta see the human spider thing.
Yeah.
The pet.
Leave us.
It understands. So back to this one. Faye looks real confused when she says this, when she says, put your right hand in the box. And he kind of looks down and surprise, there was a box there the whole time.
Yeah,
I guess. Or she pulled it out of one of her pockets. Maybe.
Maybe she had like pockets in her sleeves.
Could be.
It's a, you know, it's a portable box. It would make sense to be able to, you know, just have it on you.
Yeah.
I'm just she's got glad. That thing on her, dude. Watch out.
She stays packing. I'm just glad that this far in the future, they finally figured out how to make women's clothing with, you know,
pockets.
Pockets that are, you know, functional. So the strings rise. He looks at her. She looks at him. And
she goes in for a kiss almost.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to. Yep.
Yeah.
But then the camera does one of those pan things that we've seen a couple times this week. And we see that she's holding the Gom Jabbar at his neck.
The high-handed enemy just millimeters away.
Yep, that's right. I wrote here, we get the blue ball smash cut into some flowers, basically.
Into rain falling on a lotus.
Rain
falling. A very suggestive shot.
Yes.
Yes. Indeed. Indeed. Quite. Yes. But we are notably no longer on Gady Prime.
Right.
We are back on Kaitan.
Yes. Yes, we are.
And under an awning, we see two Bene Gesserit seated. One woman in a white dress, but with a black, you know, veil on.
Yep.
And then another woman standing under this same awning. And then off to the side, just in the rain, three more sisters of the Bene Gesserit. Tough shit. You got to deal with it. Fuck these guys in particular.
I wonder if they have different, like, rain robes.
No, like it looks like coats? It looks like it's all the same.
Just they're the Gore-Tex robe that the Bene Gesserit wear.
From L.L. Bean.
Yeah, of course. It's got a lifetime warranty.
Do you think an L.L. Bean warranty would last 30,000 years in the future? Hey, man,
lifetime's lifetime, dude. All right? Just like there's no rule that it says a dog can't play basketball. There's no rule in the L.L. Bean policy that says it will not be honored 30,000 years into the future. So we hear Margot's voice.
Yep.
And she's basically giving them the debrief of what happened with Fade on Gady Prime. And I love, love, love the description that she gives of him because it's so painfully accurate.
Yeah. Yes.
She goes, a sociopath of high intelligence, driven, cruel, but strongly motivated by honor. He yearns to be hurt.
And that's it.
That's where we end. Thankfully, we end not in the middle of a word.
Not in the middle of a word. A very, like, clear, like, end of a full statement. There's no, like, mid-sentence, like, what's going to continue? Like, no. That's the report.
Yep. He yearns to be hurt. Oh, man. A therapist would have a field day with this one.
Unfortunately, I don't have any therapist friends that we can bring on to the show, and I don't think my therapist would want to be on the show.
Nah, nor mine. my therapist thinks this is a silly thing that we do, and I agree with her.
So does mine. She's like, I mean, you know, whatever you want to do that, like, makes you happy. I'm like, well, you know, I just get to fucking yap about my special interests for a while, so...
My therapist said, well, I'm glad you have a creative outlet. And I said, oof. No, she's supportive. She is very supportive of what we do here at the Dune Minute. Okay, so sociopath, check. We've seen it. High intelligence, yeah, we've seen it. Driven, yes. Cruel, obviously. Strongly motivated by honor.
We saw that. Yep. Pretty cut and dry with the you fought well Atreides.
Absolutely. And he yearns to be hurt. He licked his own knife.
He licked his own knife. Probably like got off during the box test, if I'm gonna be honest with you.
Sure. Yeah, we didn't see, and I wish we could have seen how he reacted.
Oh God.
That would have been fun.
Yeah. I bet you they filmed it.
That would track.
Yeah. Extended Dune, please.
I'm going to guess zero emotion through the whole thing. And he probably kept his hand in longer than he needed to.
Zero emotion through the whole thing up until the point. So when Paul had his break, when he went from pain to anger, Fade's break would have been from no emotion to like ecstasy.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. If I had to guess.
Yeah. Or maybe just that sadistic laugh that he did earlier in the fight, you know?
I think that was more of just like the fear of death. Like he could only laugh in the face of death. Whereas like with this wasn't necessarily death though. It's just a test to see how he reacts to
pain. I mean, death was literally at his neck. It's a strong parallel to the fight with Lanville.
Sure. Except he couldn't manipulate the Gamjabar test to like allow the blade to like pass, you know, beyond him.
True.
In a literal sense, there's a.
Yeah, it's one of those things like where, if I'm gonna maybe cut this part. It's one of those things like where if you are a person in like a high control job, typically you seek things to do where you are out of like you don't have that control.
Yeah. Like a lot of, you know, clients of dominatrixes are generally CEOs and shit like that.
Yeah. That's what I was getting at. And I think Faye would have a similar mindset.
Yeah.
He is always in control. He is always, everything is planned.
Fade just wants his dommy mommy.
Well, he found one. And, I'm a little jealous, buddy. So
all of that staying in.
That's fine.
All right.
So, John, what did you think of this week?
10 out of 10. We got a fucking glow glow. No, in reality, I'm still going to rank this week pretty high at probably an 8, just because, first of all, the glow globe tax. But more importantly, like, this has been a week that I've been looking forward to talking about just because of how fucking cool Margot Fenring is. And like, this is us seeing her in action.
Yeah.
After having sat with her character for 2 weeks now, well, give or take 2 weeks, you know, knowing that she exists and will be offering something to the story, but this is her payoff moment.
Yeah.
Because we'll have her very briefly on Monday's episode to continue this conversation that we're leaving off this week with. But beyond that, she's no longer in the movie.
Yeah.
For now.
Yep. Well,
I'm really hoping that we get to see more of her and maybe Hazimir and, you know, Messiah, but, you know, we'll see.
We'll see. Another notable missing portion of Margot Fenring was actually from the first movie. When the Atreides move into the house on Arrakis.
The Fenrings take over Caladan.
Yes. Not what I was getting at.
Oh.
There was a brief period where the Fenrings had control over Arrakis.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was it had to have been in between the Harkonnens and the Atreides.
Yeah.
Now, this is a thing we don't see in the movies, or at least the Denis movies, but in the castle or the palace on in Arrakeen, there is like this, what's the fucking word? Like a greenhouse, basically.
Yeah.
Arboreum, is that a word?
I think it's arboretum.
Arboretum, thank you. Yes, it is an arboretum. That basically takes the place of the palm trees out in the courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I should say the palm trees take the place of the arboretum in the movie to book translation. One of the first interactions that we get of Margot Fenring is leaving Jessica a note to read. And it is a coded Bene Gesserit note that basically says, hey, the Harkonnens are planning some fuck shit. She doesn't know the details, but it's coming.
There's some fuck shit happening.
So she gives her advance warning, and that's really what kicks off the motions of the Harkonnen attack on the Atreides. So mm-hmm. We definitely don't get that. But we can see like there is camaraderie between Margot Fenring and Jessica. Margot is full, like just full force Bene Gesserit. She is in there. She is dedicated to the cause. She is what they call a breeder, which is a terrible term, but the 60s, man.
Yeah.
She is one of the Bene Gesserit who they trust to maintain those genetic bloodlines.
Yeah.
I guess Jessica fell into the same category there. But yeah, just, she's cool. She's a fucking cool character. And we don't get a lot of her in the movies, but what we do get is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it several times this week, but just like the way that they portray her, like complete mastery of that
mm-hmm.
power of suggestion and the psychological manipulation is like, it's so fucking cool, dude.
Yeah.
And it just makes me more and more, sad that we don't see the true like relationship between Margot Fenring and Hasimir Fenring.
Yeah.
Fenring in these movies, because it, like, I don't know how many times we need to say it, they're the coolest fucking couple in sci-fi. Like they just
yeah.
are.
Yeah, they're awesome. I mean, this is a story about the Bene Gesserit, which is not even really an excuse for not having Hasimir, because he has like light Bene Gesserit skills.
He is the failed Kwisatz Haderach. Yeah, like the, yeah. I mean,
yep.
So. I don't know how you can say that this is a story about the Bene Gesserit and not include him.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to start getting to the point where like a lot of my criticisms of this movie are really going to start, you know, kind of appearing
okay.
because the decisions that Denis makes or doesn't make about this movie really start to like compound here in the back third or the back half.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, it kind of makes part two suffer a lot compared to the source material as its own movie. Mm-hmm. It's still great as a movie that needs to be made for mass audience adoption. It did a fantastic job. Like Dune yes. Part Two was a landmark, like cinematic event.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it birthed the whole like popcorn bucket
thing. I was about to say, I think most of the box office success was due to the popcorn bucket.
That and the fact that it is for a mass market, a great movie.
It is. Yep.
But the amount of stuff that is left on the table or just completely left untouched from the source material bites it in the ass.
It does. It does.
But we'll, as far as these,
we'll get there.
Yeah.
Before we move on, though, a couple, a little, or two little bits of Denis Villeneuve news, pretty recent to us. One that I, or no, I guess one bit of Denis move. He has been tapped on the shoulder to do the next Bond movie.
He has. And Tanya LaPointe is producing. She's one of the producers. I don't know if she's a producer or an executive producer of Dune Part 2. I feel like I should know at this point because she writes Art and Soul of Dune. But yeah.
So super pumped about that.
Oh, yeah.
I love a Bond.
It's basically an entire like series reboot too.
Yeah. Now the part that I am not super jazzed about it is that they seem, or at least it seems to be pointing to a Tom Holland Bond.
I don't think so.
I hope not. I like Tom Holland. He's fine, but he's not Bond.
No.
They need to get Cavill in there.
I don't think it's going to be Cavill.
Oh, I would love to see Cavill.
I would love to see Cavill too, but Cavill is not, he's too box face
too
to
Superman.
Be. Yeah. Yeah. He's too Superman to be a Bond. I'm excited. Like, but give me Dune part, or give me Dune Messiah first.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's,
do you think they're going to call it Dune Messiah, or do you think they're going to call it Dune Part 3?
They'll call it Part 3, I bet.
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's literally a toss of the coin.
Yeah.
For this one. My last thing on Bond, I think we can both agree on this one. Idris Elba Bond would be amazing.
Idris Elba Bond would be amazing, but he's too old.
I know.
Idris Elba Bond 10 years ago would have been really cool.
Idris Elba from The Wire Bond would have been perfect. that would have been fun. But anyway, so that's my Bond update, which is super old news.
That's your Denis update.
My Denis update, yeah. Which is super old news by the time this comes out.
But, yeah. I don't think we even talked about the casting of the kids on the podcast.
We haven't, no. Casting for Messiah, some casting has been released. We got...
our Pats' Cytale, baby.
Yeah. That's going to be good.
Yeah.
That's going to be real fun.
I think we
He's
talked
just
about...
just enough of a fucking weirdo to make it work.
I think we talked about Robert Pattinson as Cytale.
We talked about it at the bar. No, you and I talked about it at the bar last week.
Robert Pattinson, obviously, like, Twilight man. But, like, since then...
He's good.
He's like had him. Some really good stuff that he's been in.
He won me. I think he won me over at the Lighthouse.
He won me over with The Devil All the Time.
Okay, yeah.
Which I don't know if you've seen.
I've not seen that.
He plays a preacher that just is an absolute piece of shit, and like that. If he can like nail that kind of role for Cytale, perfect.
Nice. But then we get grown. Leto II.
Teenage Leto
Teenage, II. Teenage Leto II. And Ghanima.
Yeah.
Ghanima? We're going to have another.
It's Ghanima.
Okay, Ghanima.
You called it Ghanima? What the fuck?
Oh, man. I've been drinking. I'm kidding. But
no, you're not.
So we get some casting there. For Leto II, we have
Jason Momoa's kid.
I can't remember his name right now. I believe this will be the first thing that he acts in.
Yep.
So nepotism alive and well in Hollywood, baby. Hopefully he's good. And then who's playing Ghanima?
Ghanima?
Did I say it again? Fuck.
Ghanima?
Ghanima. It's going to take me some time.
What do you mean it's going to take you time? It's pretty cut and dry. Martin's going to have a field day with this
That's
one.
That's fine.
So, Ghanima is being played by Ida Brooke, who plays a flashback of a character named Shirley from Silo, according to her IMDb.
Shirley.
I haven't watched Silo yet, and I know I'm behind, and I need to. Sorry, Alicia. But that's like Ida Brooke has two credits on her IMDb. So both of these actors are very new, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting, which makes me believe that for Leto and Ghanima, it's going to be kind of like a sci-fi miniseries thing where they just like appear in like a prescient vision and there's not much like actual acting that they're probably going to be doing.
Interesting.
Because also that really fucks with the timeline and the storytelling for Children of Dune too, because they're like nine at the beginning of Children and not teenagers.
And
then they go off in the desert for a few years and like grow up and do like their own shit separated. And then they come back and it's like,
and where does Anya Taylor-Joy fit into all this?
Yeah. Like
this is going to be a wild one.
This is what I'm talking about already with like some of the decisions versus the not decisions that are being made in Dune Part 2 that will have cascading consequences for the entire thing going forward. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't think you gave this week a rating though. So to reiterate and go back, because we've been like ranting for 20 minutes at least, I'm giving this week a solid 8. Yeah,
I was also going to join you at an 8.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fantastic week.
Yep.
This is the most rambly ass fucking Dune Minute episode.
But we took on some tangents. You know what? That's fine though. That's why they listen, I think.
What is the Dune Minute if we don't go off on tangents?
What is a podcast other than two people saying words?
Or more.
All right, cool. Well, that will do it for this week. Great week. Awesome to see the Glow Globe back.
We have some news. Well, I dropped the news on Monday's episode.
You spoiled that one quick.
I did. Unless I go back in and edit it out.
That's true. That's true. Let's imagine that you do.
Yeah. We have some news. Next week, we'll have another guest, a returning guest.
Yes.
Chome director, who we talked about a little bit in the start of the week, you know, talking about, you know, the relationship between the Landsrad and the Emperor. Chome director will be joining us for next week's episodes of the Dune Minute. Going to be talking a lot about the black market.
Yeah.
Of the Dune universe.
I am so excited to hear what he has to say about this.
Yeah. We touched on it a little bit with our Chome conversation, but
I think a good primer for some of the stuff that you're going to hear next week, because we will inevitably go on some long tangents next week. A good primer for those would be go back to our summer school on Chome and listen to that beast of an episode.
On Chome featuring
Chome. On Chome featuring one of the directors of Chome himself. So, check that out. We will be back next week for that riveting conversation.
I'm excited.
Me too. All right, cool. Well, if you would like to reach out to us, we are on bluesky@duneminute.com. You can also reach out to us via email, and our email address is duneminute@gmail.com. So please get in touch if you have any opinions on some bullshit that we said today. Oh, one thing I didn't mention in my written review is that Marco uses the Dennis system. That's an automatic 8.
Maybe an 8.5.
8.5?
Maybe.
All right, Martin, update it.
Yeah, 8.5. Update the sheet. This is how we'll know if he actually listens to the end of the episode, too. What week is this? 17. All right, cool.
All right, we'll see y'all later.
Bye.